Thank you. The first thing I want to say is that the title of the talk is actually wrong. It's literally wrong. It's not a change. The term simple in this subject has a very specific meaning these days. A simple Shemora variety is one defined using the unitary group defined by a division algebra. And when I made up the title, I was thinking that simple to me meant, well, essentially little. Some Shemora varieties of low dimension or made out of things of low dimension. That's what I'm going to talk about. I'm not going to talk about the division algebra, unitary group Shemora varieties, which in fact will, I believe, be the subject of the next talk. And in fact, we're now going to have two talks on the weight monodromy conjecture, and there is essentially no overlap between them. But what I will do is start with, unlike in the last talk, a philosophical discussion. I'll start with a few pages of technical definitions so that people know what the objects are. Now, my viewpoint on this question is almost entirely Galois theoretic. It's concerned with Eladic representations. So I will start off with some very simple things. First of all, Vey numbers. I guess most of us will know what these are. Q is a power of the prime P, and I'm going to have an integer at first, J, and I'm going to say an integral Q, Vey number of weight J, I'll say alpha is an integral Q, Vey number of weight J, if alpha is an algebraic integer, and the absolute value of sigma of alpha is equal to Q to the J over 2, let's say for all sigmas in the automorphism group gamma Q of Q bar. That's an integral Q Vey number, and then if I want to just say usually the Q will be understood, and if I want to just say beta is a Vey number of weight J, deleting the integrality condition if beta is, of the form alpha times P to the K, some K in Z, and of course the absolute value of beta is equal to Q to the J over 2. So that's what a Vey number is. And that was the first little definition. And the second definition we need is what an Eladic representation is. It's just to establish convention because everybody here knows what it is. So I'm going to have K be a field and L be a prime. When this field is local, L will be assumed prime to the residue characteristic. L is distinct from the residue characteristic P. We'll have rho from gamma K to the automorphism group of a finite dimensional vector space over QL bar. It's an Eladic representation. It's an Eladic rep if there exists, let's say, a field T, a finite extension of QL, and a row zero from gamma K to and a vector space V, VT over T, such that, row zero going to GLVT, such that row zero tensored up to QL bar is isomorphic to rho. So my Eladic representations are LQL bar Eladic representations, and I guess this is supposed to be continuous. Well, okay, if you want it to be. They all will be here, but you don't have to be. No, that's not true. I mean, not under the general hypothesis that this is any homomorphism. I didn't say this was continuous. I said this was continuous. Well, maybe we talk about it later. But if this is not a finitely generated group, then obviously there will quite possibly be homomorphisms. So that's just a definition. A pair rho v is called motivic. A lattice representation is motivic. If there exists a variety x, let's put x over k, such that, and I guess I'll have x be projective and smooth. So projective and smooth such that rho v is a constituent of Hj, usual thing, the Elatic A-tal cohomology, occurs inside the Elatic A-tal cohomology. And maybe I'll allow myself a tape twist like this. And of course, in this case, the rho v would typically be said to have weight j minus 2k. Now let's talk about the local V group. So K is local. K is local, and let's see. Q is, of course, the cardinality of the residue field. Notation is, as usual, WK. And I just want to set up what we're talking about here. We have the following non-exact sequence. We can write this as gamma of little k, where little k is, of course, the residue field. So this is not exact. This is the wild inertia, maximal pro-p subgroup of the inertia group. And then I mod IW is the tame inertia group, and that's isomorphic, non-canonically, to the product over all L not equal to P, ZL. And we'll make a choice once and for all. We're working with only one L at a time, but we might as well choose once and for all a tame character T, which is an isomorphism of IT with ZL for each L. Do I need to say anything further about this? I need to make a convention about Frobenii. So let's do that. In here, we'll choose gamma of k is isomorphic to, q to the z, and a Frobenius element. This arrow here, I'll denote by an absolute value map. A Frobenius here is any element that goes to q inverse. Okay, that's what I'll call a Frobenius. And of course, I need to remind you that the following law is satisfied. Phi x, phi inverse equals q inverse x for all x in the tame quotient. Let's consider this as an identity in W mod IW, WK, that's what I'll call WKT, the tame V group, and we have this identity for all X in IT, which is useful later. Now, let's consider the fourth statement we need, Grothendieck's theorem. Everybody knows this. There exists a finite, or most people do, finite extension L of K, such that if J contained in I is the corresponds to the extension. Is the Galois group of gamma k bar the algebraic closure over the compositum L with the maximal unramified extension of K, then that being a subgroup of I, of course, then rho of sigma is equal to the matrix exponential of TL sigma times N, where N is a unique nilpotent matrix. Well, it's not a matrix, it's an endo of V. And now a key definition for the talk is that if L equals K in this theorem, then rho V is semi-stable. Okay, and we're interested in this talk in the properties, essentially, of semi-stable representations. Okay, let's talk about now Vedeline parameters. Then, I'm going to define for sigma in WK, these are just taken from various papers, of course. The construction was introduced by Deline about 30 years ago. This is a kind of twist of the original representation. And it's a new representation now. TL of, now you have to get all this right, so I think it's minus the Q, the logarithm to the base Q of absolute value sigma times sigma N. Yes, I think that's a number of parentheses, right? No. Okay, so that's a definition. This is a continuous rho, so rho WD is a continuous representation on the same space of the Vey group, and the key point about it is that rho WD restricted to the inertia group has finite image. And the pair, or the triple now, I guess, of V, rho WD, and N depends on the choice of T and phi, but only up to an obvious isomorphism relation. Only up to a kind of isomorphism relation, which later will actually be an isomorphism relation once I introduce the actual Vedeline group. Now, let's talk about, very little is known about the actual semi-simplicity of Frobenius endomorphisms in L-adic representations. Even for modular forms, we don't know the semi-simplicity. So we avoid that question by semi-simplifying the Frobenius. So this is define a new representation. Well, we will define a new representation in the following way. Let rho WD of phi write down its Jordan decomposition. That's rho WD of phi semi-simple times U, where U is unipotent. Sorry? K has been local for quite a while, since 3. I mean, it's not necessary, though. This is linear algebra. Any matrix has a semi-simple part and a unipotent part. Okay, so now you're going to define rho WD. Upper S is for the Frobenius semi-simplicity of sigma to be equal to rho WD of sigma U. Now we have to figure out what the exponent is again. If I did it right, it's just this. Now this is certainly well defined, and the point is that rho SWD from gamma K to, we're still going on GLV, is a continuous rep such that one, it's semi-simple, and that's in this case equivalent to saying that rho SWD of sigma is a semi-simple matrix for all sigma. Okay, so that's the associated semi-simple representation attached to WD. And what do I want to say about it? It's called the, it depends on some choices that are irrelevant, really, but it does depend on the choice of phi, evidently. So it's often called the phi semi-simplification. Now, okay, so the next topic is the Vedalin group. So now we have Vedalin. To do this, I'll choose an iota L, an isomorphism of QL bar with C, this terrible thing to do that we do all the time. And then I'm going to define the Vedalin group of K to be equal to the complex numbers semi-direct product, the Ve group in the usual way. The rule is just, of course, that sigma Z, sigma inverse, is equal to Q inverse Z for all Z and C. And the action of WK on C factors through, of course, the factors through WK mod I. It's an unramified action. So that defines the group. And now we'll regard V as a complex vector space via iota L. So that, of course, just means that ZV is equal to iota LZ inverse of, perhaps I should write it like that, V. And in this way, rho SWD is a continuous, topologize V in the obvious complex way, and is a continuous complex rep of WK. Okay, so now we've gone from our L-adic representation in this way that many of us have seen before to a complex representation of the Vedalin group. What let's call the set of such representations, I'll write as rep S WDK, and I'll systematically confuse representations and their isomorphism classes. What about this representation? Its isomorphism class is independent of the choice of phi and t. If rho v is semi-stable, then rho WDS is unramified on is trivial on I. And such representations, I'll call them also semi-stable. So, and now that leads to introducing a second S. So this is the main category we're interested in, rep SS, semi-simple for Frobenius, semi-stable for the second S, WDK. Now we need to describe what the representations of this group are. So
Let's do that. Am I up to 8? Should be up to 8. Where did 8 go, though? It says 9 here. So the structure of semi-stable modules. Well, the first thing is that each module, each finite dimensional module, is uniquely decomposable as a direct sum of indecomposable. Then V is isomorphic to some direct sum of VIs, where the VIs are indecomposable. That means they can't be written as direct sums in any way. And this is unique up to, unique in the standard ways. Up to moving those around and changing, replacing them with isomorphic things. And what are the indecomposables? Well, we can just make a bunch of them. They're like V alpha T, the V alpha T. So let me define what such a thing is. There's a C you take. It's a dimension of it is T plus 1. And you have a rho alpha T, and you have an N. Let me say what these are here. Rho alpha T of Frobenius is the diagonal matrix, alpha, Q inverse alpha, and so on, up to Q to the minus T alpha. And of course, it's an unramified representation. Rho alpha T is an unramified rep of the vague group. And N is the matrix delta I J plus 1. Okay. So it's a lower unipotent matrix. Okay, so maybe I didn't plan this properly. That defines a V alpha T, and that describes all the indecomposables of the Vedelin group. Okay. Now, what about pure modules? So that was 8. This is 9. Pure modules. Okay, so let's fix a J and Z, and then rho in this representation is pure of weight J. You could say Q pure of weight J if you wanted to. If 1 alpha, so they're so pure indecomposable first. If alpha is a V number of weight J, and no, that's not right. Of weight J. Minus T over 2. No. Yes, J minus T over 2. The log base Q of the absolute value of alpha No, no, no. So I'm right. First place. Sorry. The log base Q of alpha is T plus J over 2. So examples of pure ones are the following. Well, if T is 0, then you just have the absolute value of alpha is Q to the J over 2, and you have dimension 1. If T equals 1, then you would have something that looked like alpha, just Q inverse alpha. That would be the representation of phi. And if T equals, such a thing would typically arise from an elliptic curve at multiplicative reduction, then you might very well have just, or you would have typically just the matrix, alpha would be Q in that case, and Q inverse alpha would be 1. And then another case of interest, especially for today with surfaces, is the case where you have maybe something like Q squared Q1. Okay, and a module V is pure of weight J. If V is isomorphic to a direct sum of V alpha I TIs, where of course each of these alpha I TI is pure of weight J. Now this, I've just been thinking about this while talking, and I realized that my definition of the weight is different from the standard definition of the weight. It's shifted from the standard definition of the weight if you're familiar with the usual formulation of the weight monodromy conjecture. But it's a trivial shift, so we needn't worry about it. Well, I am a little worried about it, but I'll deal with it if it actually causes me trouble. You can generalize this to non-semi-stable representations without any trouble. And using the fact that any irreducible representation of the V group has a weight. Namely, after restriction to a subgroup of finite index, it becomes a scalar representation, and you just take the weight associated to the character. Okay. Now we need a theorem. Time for a theorem. This is a consequence of De Jong's work. I would sketch the proof, but I don't think I have. Well, maybe I'll sketch it a little bit. It's a theorem of De Jong. It's stated in the introduction of his paper on alterations, but it's not. There's no further proof in the paper. This is presumably the proof he had in mind. The one I'll show you. If rho v is motivic, the eigenvalues of phi are the eigenvalues of phi are V numbers. Perhaps if I have time, I'll give you some proof later. It's a standard argument. You're reduced to the semi-stable. Now, if rho v is motivic, then the eigenvalues of any Frobenius are V numbers. If rho v is motivic and rho v is semi-stable, then the eigenvalues of phi are V numbers. Yeah. So that was known, of course, in the case of good reduction, and it's a conjecture, I guess, of Grothendieck, Grothendieck and Deligne that it was true in general, and it's a consequence of de Jong's work. Okay, so the next topic is to define some more properties of these modules. So let's let W be a finite set of A numbers. Smooth and characteristic zero, not smooth and characteristic P. So the problem, this is a problem concerning, this is a problem, this does not concern varieties over finite fields. Deligne proved in general that any eigenvalues of Frobenius on any such variety, projective or not, is a number. But the conjecture concerns whether the eigenvalues of this Frobenius, itself non-canonical, in any semi-stable representation, well, they will be canonical if it's semi-stable, are also V numbers over the local field. So that involves some understanding of something. A finite set of V numbers, and M, will let M be a multiplicity function. So M of alpha is evidently the multiplicity of alpha, and the pair WM is pure of weight J if M of Q inverse alpha is greater than or equal to M alpha, provided the absolute value of alpha is bigger than Q to the J over 2, and 2, this is the essential condition. This is just a symmetry condition that's always satisfied. It's not a problem satisfying this. M of alpha is M of Q to the minus S alpha alpha, provided the absolute value of alpha is bigger than or equal to Q to the J over 2, where S alpha is given by some formula twice log base Q of absolute alpha Q to the minus J over 2. So it's it's actually a symmetry condition that if the for each eigenvalue alpha a certain amount greater than the central weight of purity, the J, there should be the same number of eigenvalues shifted on the other side. Then we can also define delta alpha to be M alpha minus M of Q alpha. Note that as the weights are going down, at least to the left of, so long as your weight is greater than the central weight, the multiplicities are going up. So this number is greater than or equal to zero. Again, under the hypothesis that the absolute value of alpha is greater than or equal to Q to the J over 2, something like that. And then we put W plus to be the set of roots, set of alpha, such that absolute value of alpha is greater than or equal to Q to the J over 2. And why is this called pure? So under these two conditions, it's pure. And then the reason it's called pure is precisely because if we write down a module, then define what is the module? I guess it's the direct sum alpha in W plus V alpha I guess it's S alpha, is pure weight J with these given Frobenius eigenvalues. So now there are a couple of things I want to say about this. This is of course quite trivial, but this is the unique V is the unique up to isomorphism pure module with this WM. Okay, so this it's the only one. And there's some things I want to. I'm going to prove a lemma now, so I'm going to need some definitions appropriate to that. Let's let B of V be the number of factors in this. In other words, the size of W plus. Well, it's actually. Oh, what did I do? I needed my multiplicities, don't I? So I better put the delta alphas in there. And this is just the sum of the delta alphas, and that's the dimension of the kernel of n for this module, n sub v, the number of Jordan blocks for any nilpotent matrix is just the dimension of the kernel of the matrix, and then I want to say. Now let's just prove it now on a separate board. This is the key proposition actually of the talk. The content of the talk is based on a simple piece of linear algebra, as well as other people's substantial theories. Maybe I left off some numbering, but we're supposed to be up to 14 by now. proposition. K is going to be any field. Well, let's have it be a local field. You can generalize it to any field yourselves. And V is an L-adic representation. And we're going to give for definiteness, F dot V is an increasing Galois stable filtration, and let's suppose that the graded is pure of weight J. Okay, then the lemma is just that then V is pure of weight J. Now the other direction here is totally false. Obviously, if you take any indecomposable module and semi-simplify it, then you get the semi-simple module whose eigenvalues are, for example, I guess there's no example left. But if you take one of these modules, take the one I wrote down, Q1, and so that's VQ1, and then semi-simplify it, you just get the semi-simple representation with eigenvalues Q and 1, and that's not pure. Okay, but the statement is that if you are pure after you pass through a quotient, then you were pure in the first place. Okay, and the proof of this lemma is extremely straightforward. It just is the following, based on the following anyway. If you have a V and you have a subspace in the quotient, so you have your NV and your NS and your NQ, then we have an obvious inequality of dimensions of kernels. The dimension of NV is less than or equal to the dimension of NS plus the dimension of NQ. We all know that. And on the other hand, if you consider all possible Ns on a pure set WM, then this set is pure, but not all the ends will come from
pure pure modules, then the n pure is the, which we already have seen is unique. The n pure is the one with the strictly smallest kernel. So if you compare those two, you find that the dimension of the kernel on of the n of any n on V is what? Well, let's get the direction right. So I want to say more about that. Let's see. So the dimension of the kernel is only going up when I semi-simplify, but it's minimal when it's semi-simplified. So that has to have the same that means that this module here, this NV, whatever it is, it has to have the minimal number of orbits, because this is a pure module, so that implies that NV okay, so now we're going to want to use that, obviously. So now we have to move on to modular forms. That's the key lemma. So let's let F be a number field. And we'll have pi be a cusp form on GLN AF, the Adel group of F. And I want to remind you of the global Langlands conjecture. Again, just for definiteness, I'm sure we all know it. So in particular, if I have pi, then at any finite, I only care about finite places in this talk, finite place V, I have pi V, and then I can write rho of pi V. Okay, that's a representation. That's an element of rep S W Deline K FV, and now the conjecture is just that if V rho is motivic, there exists a let's just call it a pi rho, and it's kind of the irreducible. Then there's a pi rho cuspidal on GLN AF. And of course, V rho is motivic over F, such that the obvious thing is true, such that rho restricted to rho goes to rho star V. That's a representation of the Vedelin group and that should be equal to pi. What did I say? Pi, rho of pi of rho. Pi of rho v.
So we have, let's understand the order in which the v's are taken. If we take the restricted decomposition group at v here, we get a representation of the Vedeline group. On the other hand, we do this global thing of attaching an elliptic representation somehow to an elliptic representation in automorphic form, and then the v component of that form at all v is supposed to be given by supposed to be the same parameter. So that's the global Langlands conjecture, and of course it's not known except in some very special cases. One case in which it is known is GL2 of a totally real field.
Known if F is totally real, and so now we can talk about and N is 2, and then you have holomorphic pi's, and they're parameterized by weights k1 through kg if g is the degree of F over Q, and I'm going to assume make the simple assumption that all ki are at least 2. Okay. Then let's see. To make things simple, I'll also assume that all ki are congruent mod 2, although this is unnecessary. It is necessary actually. Over F. So we'll assume this right now. I'll say more in a second. Then, except in one special case, unless degree F over Q is even, and pi is principal series at every finite place, the GLC is known. So let's prove a simple proposition. At first, better state the weight monodromy conjecture. I guess I've defined purity, but I never stated the actual conjecture. The weight monodromy conjecture is all if these in HJ X QL bar, then and this is all over K, a local field, and of course X is smooth over K, then the statement then V is pure of weight J. That's the statement of the conjecture. Okay, so now let's prove a proposition. If the GLC holds for pi, then the WMC holds for pi. Okay, that's a very simple proposition. How does it work? Well, at almost all places, if you know the variety will have good reduction, you know that the eigenvalues will be pure of weight J. If you translate that over to the automorphic side, it determines for you a unique twist. There's a unique twist. You know that pi tensored with norm to the J, J over 2, is unitary. Okay? And then the classification of unitaries. This proposition is known to the experts. Classification of unitaries implies the result. Now let me explain exactly how this works in the case of an unramified place. Perhaps I should read that. In the case of an unramified place, there is, we know then
We'll do the case n equals 2. This is a statement for all n. So if n equals 2, V is unramified, then pi V, while the Galois representation is just given by rho of phi, is equal to the diagonal matrix, let's say alpha beta. Okay. And what do we have to show? We have to show that alpha and beta we have to show pi V tensor norm norm to the minus. Let's also do the case of weight 2, just so it's very definite. This would be the abelian variety case. Then we have to show in this case that pi V to the norm, pi V, the eigenvalues of the Vedelin parameter here has eigenvalues that have absolute value 1. So if we have to show that's what we have to show. Now, if we twist on we know these are Weyl numbers, so the absolute value of alpha and the absolute value of beta are of the form q to the k over 2 for some k. We twist these down. So we twist them by this minus a half. So we're going to twist the q to the k over 2, just have q to the k minus 1 over 2. Okay. Now the q to the k minus 1 over 2, we don't know what k is, but we know that these guys have absolute value, q to the k minus 1 over 2, but we know from the unitary theory that that the absolute value of alpha prime and beta prime lies strictly in the interval q to the minus a half is less than absolute value alpha prime beta prime is less than q to the half. But since they're Weyl numbers, that implies that the absolute value alpha prime, the absolute value of beta prime is 1. So that completes the proof. So all you do by proving their Weyl numbers, you sandwich these numbers, the possibilities for the eigenvalues into some, you put them in a discrete set, and then the unitarity is sufficiently strong to leave only one Weyl number in that set. One, you sandwich it in this interval, and then there's only one Weyl number left. So that proves the corollary of this. So this is the corollary of this argument, or example of this argument, is the Ramanujan conjecture holds. Holds for such forms. So let me quickly deal now with with the case that's left over. And then I have only a few minutes left to actually discuss the weight monodromy conjecture. We can use, there are many ways to finish the argument for those extra forms, those weight 2 even degree principal series forms. So let's just do one quickly. In the remaining case, well, sim 2 pi, base change to L, where L is a CM extension of F, is motivic. We don't know how to realize pi itself motivically, or its Lattice representation, but we know that it's motivic. Okay? And we know that Richard, by Taylor, that even without knowing that this pi is a motivic, we know that there exists a row, an L-adic representation that's satisfying local Langlands, satisfying the global Langlands conjecture.
even though it's not motivic, it's an Hilletic representation, and so it satisfies, the conclusion of the global language conjecture. We know it satisfies the conclusion, but we don't yet know it's motivic, and we're not going to prove it's motivic. We don't know how to do that. Okay, but we know. Okay, so what do we know? Well, we know, therefore, that the eigenvalues of sim 2, rho t pi, at any place v, the eigenvalues, the Frobenius eigenvalues, are V numbers by de Jong. But now we just do the same argument I just gave you, but we do it on GL3. So now we have these numbers, alpha squared, alpha beta, beta squared, and we give the same argument. Well, we quote the proposition, if you like. Implies Ramanujan conjecture. Well, implies that, same argument implies that absolute value alpha squared, this time twisted by Q inverse, is 1. And that's what you wanted to show. You wanted to show that absolute value of alpha was Q to the half. Okay. So that settles that. So that proves the Ramanujan conjecture for all the holomorphic Hilbert modular forms on this hypothesis, the weight at least 2, and the weight's all congruent mod 2. In fact, this hypothesis is irrelevant. It's just a traditional one. But if you just reformulate the entire theory using U2 instead of GL2, which seems like a trivial change if you're a Lie group theorist, but if you're a Shimura variety theorist, it's highly non-trivial. You use U2 instead of GL2. This condition goes away. So let's just make one remark about where there's still a serious open problem. If sum ki equals 1, and the other, some other ki is bigger than 1, this appears to be hopeless. Hopeless, in my opinion. Why? That's because if you consider, we can certainly make, a student of Richard Taylor made rho t l pi exists, but if you consider the full tensor category, there's still no way of finding in the setting of Shimura varieties that I know of, no way of finding any modules, any non-one dimensional modules in here. Well, the only essential modules are the symmetric powers. There's no way of realizing any tensor power or symmetric power or whatever, inside the cohomology of a Shimura variety, so I don't see how to get the Vey number hypothesis satisfied. So this seems rather hard, and for such a pi, they exist. Of course, there is an easy case: the CM such forms exist there, and they of course automatically satisfy the hypothesis. Okay, now let me move on to, in the zero remaining minutes, to the how you prove the weight monodromy conjecture. We've already done everything you need to do to set it up. All I have to do is state for you the structure of the zeta function. A trivial consequence or reformulation of allowing the ramified places here is that rho t pi, the Hilletic representations of Taylor, satisfy the weight monodromy conjecture. WMC, well, rho t pi satisfy at all v the WMC. We're only going to consider the case to deal with the cohomology itself, diagonal weight, but that's true in general. Hence, lots of things are true. Let's consider rho t pi restricted to a big Galois extension L of Q. Then now, if we take any automorphism of L over Q,
then we can, of course, twist rho in the usual way, making a conjugate representation. And if I take, say, tall one through r different ones of these, extending perhaps r distinct infinite places of f, then I could consider representation that looks like tau I rho t pi L. That's I've twisted each one and I've tensored this from I equals 1 to R. Now, why would I do this? Well, the theory of the zeta function of the Shimura varieties of the following type, let B be an equaternion algebra over F, such that B tensor B completed at say infinity J is isomorphic to M2R is split, and B at another infinite place is isomorphic to the Hamilton quaternions. Such a Shimura variety has the essential part of its cohomology in degree R, the rest is all coming from the trivial representation. At finite level U, this is its semi-simplification, that's what the trace formula computes for U, its semi-simplification, its constituents are all multiples of these. So let's call this R pi. And that's, this is a direct sum of R pi's. Semi-simplification. And this representation, you'll note, is itself semi-simple. Why is that? That's because we know that these representations, these two dimensionals, are irreducible, hence semi-simple, and the tensor product of semi-simples is semi-simple. And we know that any constituent of these, and so the tensor product will satisfy the weight monodromy conjecture, and every direct sumand satisfies the weight monodromy conjecture. So all sumands satisfy the weight monodromy conjecture. Okay. Now, we know that the set, therefore, by the zeta function computation of this, due, of course, to essentially to Langlands and Kottwitz, we know by computing at all but finitely many primes such an identity. Hence, we have such an identity by Chebotarev. Globally, such an identity holds globally by Chebotarev. Okay, but therefore we know that the semi-simplification of the zeta function of the Shimura variety satisfies the global semi-simplification. Semi-simplify globally, and then restrict to a given decomposition group at a place satisfies the weight monodromy conjecture. Okay? The semi-simplification satisfies the weight monodromy conjecture. But I proved this key proposition that said exactly that if a semi-simplification, if the global semi-simplification is exactly, from it you construct exactly such a filtration any way you like, and the global semi-simplification that therefore satisfies the weight monodromy conjecture, hence so does the original variety itself. The case of the unitary groups in higher variables that I mentioned in the title follows in exactly the same way because we've computed the zeta function at the finite places and because we know the global irreducibility of the constituents of the zeta function. For quite a while we've known that. And also, I should say, the method won't work in higher dimensions yet because it's key. Although I passed over it very quickly, it's key to have. This is not a proof of the weight monodromy conjecture. It's an example of showing that rho, that weight monodromy conjecture for one variety, implies the weight monodromy conjecture for another variety. That's all we've shown. But the key for justifying this implication is some. It involves this game with semi-simplification
it's key here to know that these varieties have a strong semi-simplicity result for the original Eladic representations. Now, under the global Langlands conjecture, the rows in this correspondence should be irreducible, but we don't know even for say U4, we don't know that the Eladic representations you compute using a Shimura variety say of type 3.1 attached to a U4 of type 3.1. We don't know that the four-dimensional Eladic representations you make in that case are semi-simple. They should be irreducible, but we don't know that, and that gets in the way of extending this to other examples. So, thank you.